This is the tape of the second interview with Jesse Haver Butler. This is the first detail tape, the previous interview being a general broad sweep of her life. In the present tape, we cover her early years in Pueblo, Colorado, her antecedents, especially some stories of her mother's feminist consciousness and suffrage activities in the valley in which they lived, her early school experiences and influences which led later to her going to Smith College. She discusses in detail her determination to go to Smith and how it came about. Covered also are her years at Smith College and her disappointment in their not providing her with a sense of how she could both pursue the intellectual life as well as being a mother and wife. Following her years at Smith, she discusses her first two jobs in New York, the first at Macmillan Company and the feminist battle that she had over wages, which led to her eventual quitting, and her second job at the Pulitzer School of Journalism. She relates how she acquired the job in Boston, but the details of this will be covered in the next tape. At the end of the tape, she covers some of her experiences in New York as a single woman and discusses the conditions under which she lived.
What I'd like to try and cover today is your early years in Pueblo, a little bit of the background of your parents, the story that you told me about your mother going to Nebraska and giving a talk on Bellamy.
Now wait, I got a piece of paper. I better just jot this.
The early years in Pueblo, mm-hmm. A little bit of background on your parents, particularly the story about your mother and the Bellamy talk in Nebraska.
Parents and mother, well, there was something else I was going to ask you. Oh, what was the name of the man in Germany that started the whole military program? Wasn't that Bismarck?
Mm-hmm.
I wasn't sure. All right, go ahead.
Then I never did find out if you had any other brothers or sisters.
Mm-hmm.
A little bit of information about them and your education in Pueblo.
Mm-hmm.
Then moving on to how you happened to go to Smith College. And what the influences were on you when you were at Smith.
There's my picture at Smith right there. I've just had it.
Well, then, if at Smith, any kind of feminist consciousness that you felt other people had there, the kinds of influences that were exerted on you at Smith, then the story you told me about how you received your training as a legal secretary again.
Mm-hmm.
And if we get to it, your first two jobs,
mm-hmm.
maybe going up to when you went to Boston.
Mm-hmm.
But I would like to treat the Boston and then when you went to Washington and your work with the Consumers League separately, because I see the Boston job as something that worked into the other.
Yeah, started.
That was very similar to, so that maybe mm-hmm. that those first earlier
mm-hmm. the first two jobs, you see, weren't weren't really for women or anything, you see. Mm-hmm.
So that would give us a good background, I think.
Mm-hmm.
So if you want, we can start with maybe just telling me a little bit about your parents and the kinds of influence, the kind of feminist.
Well, their background of both parents is amazing, really. Don't start yet. It's an example of how what fine people helped to build America, yet handicapped because of its primitive, because of the pioneer, you know, struggle that there was. You must remember, we must never forget that it's just 200 years from the Atlantic to the Pacific, what's 200 years? And so a lot of the people that helped build up that West, like my father and mother, they were rare people. Had they been 50 years later, they'd have been leaders in any community where they were. But there they were with all that talent in this primitive environment, you see. And that's of course, what's built America. See. Now, I'd like to talk a little bit about my mother's background, as this is about women. But I would like to have a few words about my father, too. Before I talk about my mother, I'd like to give a few words, and I'm starting. Before I talk about my mother, I'd like to give a few words about her family background. Her father was a graduate of Berlin University. And he also then, after graduating from Berlin, got trained as a Lutheran minister in Germany. And then he was inspired to come to America to Christianize the Indians. But he also wanted to get out of Germany because that was the era when Bismarck was launching his great military program. And this little man, he was a short little man, and he wore chin whiskers like Paul in Africa did. And he got out to Iowa and later to Nebraska, and in his life, he founded all the Lutheran churches in Nebraska and a great many private Lutheran schools that are still in existence. He evidently was a man of great drive and energy. In Nebraska, then, he had 6 children. And during the birth of the last child, there was an Indian raid, and his wife died in childbirth. So he put all his smallest children into the hands of different farmers in the area. But my mother, who was the oldest, and her sister, she was 10 years old, and her sister was 8, were put in an orphanage. Now, what an orphanage in Nebraska must have been like is hard to imagine. And I later learned, through analysis in London, that my mother was raped in that orphanage, which accounted for the fact there was a tremendous emotional situation with her and me from the beginning. This is just the kind of thing that happened in those early days. When she was 16 years old, she wanted to get educated, evidently having inherited the kind of mind that her father had. So he let her go to Colorado, which even in those days had the best school system of the West, before ever they got the vote. And she went to Pueblo, Colorado, and became a maid in one of the leading families of that city, whose husband had the first store for men's clothing. And then, but she was not a full-time worker. She went to high school as well as to work in this family. And being a German girl, she was a good cook and a good housekeeper and a pretty, pretty woman, short with blue eyes and gay and happy character. And in that job, she met my father, who was the first dairyman of Colorado, of Pueblo. He had founded or started a dairy 1.5 miles west of Pueblo. And he had built his house of 'dobe bricks that he had made himself on the ground, baked them, formed them, baked them, and then built the house. And then he brought his wife to this house already built.
How old was she when they married?
She was about 22. No, she was a little younger. She was younger than that. She died when she was 32, and I was 10 years old. So I can't figure out just at this moment how young she was. She was a fairly young woman. And interesting story is that she and my father, just like myself and my husband, were very much interested in public questions. And in those days, instead of reading about communism, if you were radical, you read about socialism. And so their favorite book was Looking Backward by Bellamy. Was one of the first books on socialism, and is still a very interesting and well-written book. So before she was married, she wanted to go back and visit her German relatives in Nebraska, and she did. And to their horror and astonishment, she pasted a notice on the door of her father's church that on a certain night she was going to give a lecture on socialism. Now you can imagine, in a typical German community where the girls were supposed to be definitely housewives for life, to have a young girl like that about to be married lecturing on socialism was a shock. Everybody went to hear what she said, but disapproved of it thoroughly. And years later, when I was in Smith College, I stopped at this community on the way home, and her sister, younger sister, told me this story with great shame. She said, "You know, your mother was really peculiar. We never quite understood her." And I said, "How was she peculiar?" Well, then she told me this story of socialism and her lecture. I said, "Did the people go?" "Oh, yes, the church was filled. It was such a sensation." But they felt very sorry for her future husband that he was marrying such a strange and peculiar woman. And then I remember vividly when the campaign for woman suffrage was going on in Colorado, how she climbed into that spring wagon. I can see her yet doing it. And why she didn't take me along, that would have been a good thing to do, but I think I was babysitting at this point. And she toured that valley to get the men to vote for woman suffrage. And this wasn't something that a good little housewife, even in Colorado in those days, was supposed to do. But anyway, she helped, and in the end, 1893, is when Colorado got woman suffrage. And of course, that great woman suffrage leader, Susan B. Anthony, of course, had been out there all over the state for months. And she walked, she rode donkeys, and you know what she did when she got to a mining town? There was no place to speak but the saloon. And so she walked into the saloons, cold, and made her speeches, and the men were so grateful and happy to see that lovely woman that would take such an interest in them, that she was a sensation, because women were scarce in Colorado in those days and terribly valuable, and she was such a sweet and gracious person, and that she would take the trouble to go into their saloons and talk to them. And that's one way that Colorado got the vote.
Did your mother go with Susan B. Anthony?
No, she never met her, as far as I know. She did her little deal, all on her own in that valley. And while I'm on the subject of that valley of the Arkansas River and the farm area where we were, there wasn't a single family in that area whose mother brought the children up. They all died early. There were no doctors. There was no sink in the kitchen. There were no telephones, no cars. And children were born. I was born with no one there but my father to help with the process. But my mother was very smart. She had a great big book that she was thoroughly read up on. And then she was another faddist. So it's been natural that I've been a faddist all my life. She was interested in modern nutrition. And there was a man named Dr. Jackson in where Pillsbury's Flour is now, that started a whole system of new ways of eating. And my mother had all his books. But he had some strange ideas that didn't fit in with ranch life very well. One of them was that there was to be no supper. And of course, the people were healthier without eating a big supper. Of course, this was difficult for my father, and he had five hired men in the end who were fed by my mother in our home, and to go without supper until breakfast, from the dinner meal till breakfast, must have been a great strain. My brother and I took care of the situation. We swiped turnips and celery and watermelons and corn from all the neighboring fields and apples, and we were well fed, even though there was no supper in the kitchen. In fact, we became such thorough thieves when it came to finding food at night that our mother had to hide everything that was edible in the kitchen and was unable to cope with the thievery. One thing I did, too, that was not very honest, I used to take my Sunday school money, and she would never let us have any candy, because even then, the theory was that candy and sweets were bad for children. We know now she was right. So I used to take my Sunday school money and fill up the bags with candy. And then later, as we got a little older, our father bought us a little Shetland pony and cart to drive to school. We were 2 miles from the school, out of the valley, up over the hills, and across the prairies.
Was it a regular ranch with animals? And
our ranch, oh yes, my father had 100 cows. He had the largest milk barn in the whole of Colorado. Had he been living 50 years later, he would have been a very great man, because he had a fine mind and was an organizer and had this modern dairy of Holstein cattle. And, oh yes, and another thing I had was a goat for a plaything. But you know, the goat just loved to hide, and then when some man put down a pail of milk, he would go and sink his nose in it up to his ears. And so there was a great talk about how that goat was going to end his life. And he did. He had a tragic ending in the end. But this little Shetland pony that we had in cart was a sensation at the Carlisle School where we went, the grade school, a very good. It was in that Carlisle School that I had the greatest teacher of rhetoric in the fourth grade that has stayed with me all my life. She was a humpback. She was a homely little woman, but a great teacher. And I loved English rhetoric at that age. So you see how important it is. And Colorado had some great teachers. I'll tell about another one later on. But anyway,
was your brother younger than you? Or
yes, he was younger. Anyway, one day I did buy an extra load of candy, but it had to be all at before I arrived home. So I was very